The Creature from Cleveland Depths by Fritz Leiber. Part 4. Early next morning, windowless walls began to crawl up the stripped skyscraper between them and the lake. Daisy pulled the blackout curtains on that side. For a day or two longer, their thoughts and conversations were haunted by Gusterson's vague, sardonic visions of a horde of tickler-energized moles pouring up out of the tunnels to tear down the remaining trees, tank the atmosphere, and perhaps somehow dismantle the stars, at least on this side of the world. But then they both settled back into their customary, easygoing routines. Gusterson typed. Daisy made her daily shopping trip to a little topside daytime store, and started painting a mural on the floor of the empty apartment next theirs but one. "We ought to lasso some neighbors," she suggested once. "I need somebody to hold my brushes and admire. How about you making a trip below at the cocktail hours, Gusterson, and picking up a couple of girls for a starter? Flash the old viriler charm, cooch them up a bit, emphasize the delights of high living, but make sure they're compatible roommates. You could pick up that 2-yard check from Micro at the same time." "You're an immoral, money-ravenous wench," Gusterson said absently, trying to dream of an insanity beyond insanity that would make his next novel a real id-rousing best vendor. "If that's your vision of me, you shouldn't have chewed up the VV mask." "I'd really prefer you with green stripes," he told her. "But stripes, spots, or sunbathing, you're better than those cocktail moles." Actually, both of them acutely disliked going below. They much preferred to perch in their eyrie and watch the people of Cleveland Depths, as they privately called the local sub-suburb, rush up out of the shelters at dawn to work in the concrete fields and windowless factories, make their daytime jet trips and freeway jaunts, do their noon hour and coffee break guerrilla practice, and then go scurrying back at twilight to the atomic-proof, brightly lit, vastly exciting, claustrophobic caves. Fay and his projects began once more to seem dreamlike, though Gusterson did run across a cryptic advertisement for ticklers in the Manchester Guardian, which he got daily by facsimile. Their three children reported similar ads, of no interest to young Fry, on the TV, and one afternoon they came home with the startling news that the monitors at their subsurface school had been issued ticklers. On sharp interrogation by Gusterson, however, it appeared that these last were not ticklers, but merely two-way radios linked to the school police station transmitter. "Which is bad enough," Gusterson commented later to Daisy. "But it'd be even dirtier to think of those clock-watching superegos being strapped to kids' shoulders. Can you imagine Huck Finn with a tickler, telling him when to tie up the raft to a towhead, and when to take a swim?" "I bet Fay could," Daisy countered. "When's he going to bring you that check, anyhow? Iago wants a jet cycle, and I promised Imogene a Vena kit, and then Claudius'll have to have something." Gusterson scowled thoughtfully. "You know, Daisy," he said, "I got a feeling Fay's in the hospital, all narcotized up and being fed intravenously. The way he was jumping around last time, that tickler was going to cooch him to pieces in a week." As if to refute this intuition, Fay turned up that very evening. The lights were dim. Something had gone wrong with the building's old transformer, and, pending repairs, the two remaining occupied apartments were making do with batteries, which turned bright globes to mysterious amber candles, and made Gusterson's ancient typewriter operate sluggishly. Fay's manner was subdued, or at least closely controlled, and for a moment Gusterson thought he'd shed his tickler. Then the little man came out of the shadows, and Gustafson saw the large bulge on his right shoulder. "Yes, we had to up it a bit size-wise," Faye explained in clipped tones. "Additional super features. While brilliantly successful on the whole, the subliminal euphorics were a shade too effective. Several hundred users went hoppity-manic. We gentled the cooch and qualified the subliminals. You know, day by day, in every way, I'm getting sharper and more serene. But a stabilizing influence was still needed. So after a top-level conference, we decided to combine Tickler with Moodmaster." "My God!" Gustafson interjected. "Do they have a machine now that does that?" "Of course. They've been using them on ex-mental patients for years."
"I just don't keep up with progress," Gustafson said, shaking his head bleakly. "I'm falling behind on all fronts."
"You ought to have your Tickler remind you to read Science Service releases," Faye told him. "Or simply instruct it to scan the releases and..." "No, that's still in research." He looked at Gustafson's shoulder, and his eyes widened. "You're not wearing the new model Tickler I sent you," he said accusingly.
"I never got it," Gustafson assured him. "Postmen deliver topside mail and parcels by throwing them on the high-speed garbage boosts and hoping a tornado will blow them to the right addresses.
Then he added helpfully,
"Maybe the Russians stole it while it was riding the whirlwinds."
"That's not a suitable topic for jesting," Faye frowned. "We're hoping that Tickler will mobilize the full potential of the free world for the first time in history. Gustafson, you are going to have to wear a ticky-tick. It's becoming impossible for a man to get through modern life without one."
"Maybe I will," Gustafson said appeasingly. "But right now, tell me about Moodmaster. I want to put it in my new insanity novel."
Faye shook his head. "Your readers will just think you're behind the times. If you use it, underplay it. But anyhow, Moodmaster is a simple physiotherapy engine that monitors bloodstream chemicals and body electricity. It ties directly into the bloodstream, keeping blood, sugar, etc., at optimum levels, and injecting euphrin or depressin as necessary. And occasionally a touch of extra adrenaline, as during work emergencies."
"Is it painful?"
Daisy called from the bedroom.
"Excruciating,"
Gustafson called back.
"Excuse it, please,"
he grinned at Faye. "Hey, didn't I suggest cocaine injections the last time I saw you?"
"So you did," Faye agreed flatly.
"Oh, by the way, Gussie, here's that check for a yard I promised you. Micro doesn't muzzle the ox."
"Hooray!"
Daisy cheered faintly.
"I thought you said it was going to be for two," Gustafson complained. "Budgeting always forces a last-minute compromise," Faye shrugged. "You have to learn to accept those things."
"I love accepting money, and I'm glad any time for 3 feet," Daisy called agreeably.
6 feet might make me wonder if I weren't an insect, but getting a yard makes me feel like a gangster's moll."
"Want to come out and gloat over the yard, paper toots, and stuff it in your diamond-embroidered net stocking top?" Gustafson called back.
"No, I'm doing something to that portion of me just now. But hang on to the yard, Gustafson."
"Aye, aye, Cap'n,"
he assured her. Then turning back to Faye.
"So you've taken the Dr. Couet repeating out of the tickler?"
"No, no. Just balanced it off with depressin. The subliminals are still a prime sales point. All the tickler features are cumulative, Gussie. You're still underestimating the scope of the device."
"I guess I am. What's this work emergencies business? If you're using the tickler to inject drugs into workers to keep them going, that's really just my cocaine suggestion modernized, and I'm putting in for another thou.
Hundreds of years ago, the South American Indians chewed coca leaves to kill fatigue sensations. And so? Interesting. And it proves priority for the Indians, don't you think? I'll make a try for you, Gussie, but don't expect anything. He cleared his throat. His eyes grew distant, and turning his head a little to the right, he enunciated sharply, "Pooh bah! Time? Inst 05. 1057. 00. Record? Gussie, Coca, Thou, Budget. Cut." He explained. "We've got a voice-cued setter now on the deluxe models. You can record a memo to yourself without taking off your shirt. Incidentally, I use the ends of the hours for trifle memos. I've already used up the 59s and 8s for tomorrow and started on the 57s. "I understood most of your memo," Gusterson told him gruffly. "The last 00 was for seconds, wasn't it? Now I call that crude. Why not microseconds, too? But how do you remember where you've made a memo so you don't re-record over it? After all, you're re-recording over the wallpaper all the time." "Tickler beeps, and then hunts for the nearest information-free space."
"I see. And what's the poobah for?"
Faye smiled. "Cut. My password for activating the setter, so it won't respond to chance numerals it overhears."
"But why poobah?" Faye grinned.
"Cut. And you a writer. It's a literary reference, Gussie. Poobah, cut, was Lord High everything else in the Mikado. He had a little list, and nothing on it would ever be missed."
"Oh, yeah," Gusterson remembered, glowering. "As I recall it, all that went on that list was the names of people who were slated to have their heads chopped off by Coco. Better watch your step, Shorty. It may be a backhanded omen. Maybe all those workers you're putting ticklers on to pump them full of adrenaline so they'll overwork without noticing it will revolt and come out some day chopping for your head."
"Spare me the Marxist mythology," Faye protested. "Gussie, you've got a completely wrong slant on tickler. It's true that most of our mass sales so far, bar government and army, have been to large companies purchasing for their employees."
"Uh-huh."
"But that's because there's nothing like a tickler for teaching a new man his job. It tells him from instant to instant what he must do, while he's already on the job, and without disturbing other workers. Magnetizing a wire with a job pattern is the easiest thing going. And you'd be astonished what the subliminals do for employee morale. It's this way, Gussie. Most people are too improvident and unimaginative to see in advance the advantages of ticklers. They buy one because the company strongly suggests it, and payment is on easy installments withheld from salary. They find the tickler makes the workday go easier. The little fellow perched on your shoulder is a friend, exuding comfort and good advice. The first thing he's set to say is, 'Take it easy, pal.' Within a week, they're wearing their tickler 24 hours a day, and buying a tickler for the wife, so she'll remember to comb her hair and smile real pretty and cook favorite dishes."
"I get it, Faye," Gusterson cut in. "The tickler is the newest fad for increasing worker efficiency. Once I read somewheres it was salt tablets. They had salt tablet dispensers everywhere, even in air-conditioned offices where there wasn't a moist armpit twice a year, and the gals sweat only champagne. A decade later, people wondered what all those dusty white pills were for. Sometimes they were mistook for tranquilizers. It'll be the same way with ticklers. Somebody will open a musty closet and see jumbled heaps of these gripping-hand silvery gadgets gathering dust curls, and—"
"They will not!" Faye protested vehemently. "Ticklers are not a fad. They're history-changers. They're free-world revolutionary. Why, before Microsystems put a single one on the market, we'd made it a rule that every micro-employee had to wear one. If that's not having supreme confidence in a product—" "Every employee except the top executives, of course,"
Gusterson interrupted, jeeringly. "And that's not demoting you, Fay. As the R&D chief most closely involved, you'd naturally have to show special enthusiasm." "But you're wrong there, Gussie," Fay crowed. "Man for man, our top executives have been more enthusiastic about their personal ticklers than any other class of worker in the whole outfit." Gusterson slumped and shook his head. "If that's the case," he said darkly, "maybe mankind deserves the tickler."
"I'll say it does,"
Fay agreed loudly, without thinking. Then, "Oh, can the carping, Gussie. Tickler's a great invention. Don't deprecate it just because you had something to do with its genesis. You're going to have to get in the swim and wear one." "Maybe I'd rather drown horribly."
"Can the gloom talk, too? Gussie, I said it before and I say it again, you're just scared of this new thing. Why, you've even got the drapes pulled so you won't have to look at the tickler factory."
"Yes, I am scared," Gusterson said. "Really scared." "Up!" Fay whirled around. Daisy was standing in the bedroom doorway, wearing the short silver sheath. This time there was no mask, but her bobbed hair was glitteringly silvered, while her legs, arms, hands, neck, face, every bit of her exposed skin, was painted with beautifully even, vertical green stripes.
"I did it as a surprise for Gusterson," she explained to Fay. "He says he likes me this way. The green glop's supposed to be smudge-proof."
Gusterson did not comment. His face had a rapt expression. "I'll tell you why your tickler's so popular, Fay," he said softly. "It's not because it backstops the memory or because it boosts the ego with subliminals. It's because it takes the hook out of a guy. It takes over the job of withstanding the pressure of living. See, Fay, here are all these little guys in this subterranean rat race with atomic death squares and chromium-plated reward squares and enough money if you pass go almost to get to go to again, and a million rules of the game to keep in mind to do. Or he'll lose his turn 3 times in a row, and maybe a terrible black rook in iron armor'll loom up and bang him off the chessboard. But now, look, now he's got his tickler, and he tells his sweet silver tickler all these things, and the tickler's got to remember them. Of course he'll have to do them eventually, but meanwhile the pressure's off him. The hook's out of his short hairs. He's shifted the responsibility."
"Well, what's so bad about that?"
Fay broke in loudly.
"What's wrong with taking the pressure off little guys? Why shouldn't Tickler be a superego surrogate? Micro's motivations chief noticed that positive feature right off, and scored it 3 pluses. Besides, it's nothing but a gaudy way of saying that Tickler backstops the memory. Seriously, Gussie, what's so bad about it?"
"I don't know," Gusterson said slowly, his eyes still far away. "I just know it feels bad to me." He crinkled his big forehead. "Well, for one thing," he said, "it means that a man's taking orders from something else. He's got a kind of master. He's sinking back into a slave psychology."
"He's only taking orders from himself," Fay countered disgustedly. "Tickler's just a mech reminder, a notebook. In essence, no more than the back of an old envelope. It's no master."
"Are you absolutely sure of that?" Gusterson asked quietly.
"Why, Gussie, you big oaf—"
Fay began heatedly. Suddenly his features quirked, and he twitched.
"Excuse me, folks," he said rapidly, heading for the door, "but my tickler told me I gotta go." "Hey, Fay, don't you mean you told your tickler to tell you when it was time to go?"
Gusterson called after him. Fay looked back in the doorway. He wet his lips. His eyes moved from side to side. "I'm not quite sure," he said in an odd, strained voice, and darted out. Gusterson stared for some seconds at the pattern of emptiness Fay had left. Then he shivered. Then he shrugged. "I must be slipping," he muttered. "I never even suggested something for him to invent." Then he looked around at Daisy, who was still standing poker-faced in her doorway. "Hey, you look like something out of the Arabian Nights," he told her. "Are you supposed to be anything special? How far do those stripes go, anyway?"
"You could probably find out," she told him coolly. "All you have to do is kill me a dragon or two first."
He studied her. "My God," he said reverently, "I really have all the fun in life. What do I do to deserve this?"
"You've got a big gun," she told him, "and you go out in the world with it and hold up big companies and take yards and yards of money away from them in rolls like ribbon and bring it all home to me."
"Don't say that about the gun again," he said. "Don't whisper it, don't even think it. I've got one, damn it. 38 caliber yet. And I don't want some psionic monitor with two-way clairaudience that they haven't told me about catching the whisper and coming to take the gun away from us. It's one of the few individuality symbols we've got left."
Suddenly, Daisy whirled away from the door, spun three times so that her silvered hair stood out like a metal coolie hat, and sank to a curtsy in the middle of the room. "I've just thought of who I am," she announced, fluttering her eyelashes at him. "I'm a sweet silver tickler with green stripes."
End of part 4.